This is Ham College, episode 113, for May 31st, 2024. Ham College is brought to you by ICOM. Keep your contesting edge and be a field day leader with ICOM. Field Day is one of amateur radio's favorite events and is just around the corner. On June 22nd and 23rd, more than 40,000 North American hams will come together to operate remotely. Good evening. Welcome to another episode of Ham College. I'm Professor Thomas.
I'm Dean Martin.
And tonight we have a special episode for you. Extra special.
Extra. Yeah. It is extra special.
Yep. It is.
It's the last extra special one we'll have for a bit.
So what did we talk about in the last episode?
Well, let me check my memory. Let me think about it for a minute. Probably... I think it might have been something to do with receiving antennas.
Yeah.
Radio direction finding antennas, beverage antennas. That makes me thirsty. Specialized receiving antennas and long wire receiving antennas. A lot of antennas.
Yep. Was a lot of antennas. We won't talk about any this month. We're going to talk about safety.
Not standing under them.
No. RF radiation hazards, hazardous materials, and grounding.
Grounding. Now, that's a controversial subject.
Yeah, we're going to talk very little about it tonight, but it's
probably
it made
best.
The title somehow.
It's probably best. No, won't get flamed.
KG0PL. Congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been working on that for a while. I'm glad he got it right before the pool expired.
Yes. Speaking of that, I just happened to have
the... Yeah, somebody took a bite out of that thing right there. Look at it.
Boy, it is, isn't it? Well, no. I don't know. It's a mystery.
I thought maybe... That's pretty interesting. Check that side out.
Oh, yeah. The Book of Gordo, extra class exam. And June the 30th, 2024. That means you got 1 month to go take your exam... If you've been studying from this question pool right here.
And if you've been waiting for us to finish, you probably need to start looking up testing places right after the show's over.
You should. And you should be well studied by now.
Mm-hmm.
Go over your study material one more time before you go take your exam, though. Some of you, maybe two more times.
What is the primary function of an external earth connection or ground rod? A, reduce received noise.
B, lightning protection.
C, reduce RF current flow between pieces of equipment.
Or D, reduce RFI to telephone and home entertainment systems. What is the primary function of an external earth connection or ground rod? The key there is primary because I believe that having a good earth ground could help in all things listed.
Yep.
Yep. But so the most important one I would say would have to be B, lightning protection.
Yeah, I would think so.
So
lightning is not going to help anybody.
Nope. And you could stand a little received noise if you could avoid getting struck by lightning. That's how I felt.
True story. True story.
And then
in the head.
Yeah. And it is. It's B.
Here, I'll go ahead and get it.
I need to find a lightning sound effect to go there. I don't know if this was a setup or not, but let's see what we got. Oh, it's long answers.
Yeah, I'm thinking it probably was. No, I'm just kidding.
When evaluating RF exposure levels from your station at a neighbor's home, what must you do? A, ensure signals from your station are less than the controlled maximum permitted exposure, MPE limits.
Ooh. B, ensure signals from your station are less than the uncontrolled maximum permitted exposure, or MPE limits.
C, And sure, signals from your station are less than the controlled maximum permitted emission MPE limits.
Or D, ensure signals from your station are less than the uncontrolled maximum permitted emissions or MPE limits. Wow.
This seems like a play on words here.
It is, because they all read almost the same if you just kind of like quickly scan over them. I'm going to have to go back and read them over again. So, evaluating RF exposure levels for levels from your station at a neighbor's home. Ensure signals from your station are less than the controlled maximum exposure limits. Well, that seems like a good idea. Ensure signals from your station are less than the uncontrolled maximum exposure limits. Uncontrolled. I'm going to try B. I'm not 100% sure on this one, but I think B seems...
Well, let me say this. They have guessed every possible answer in the chat room.
Well, that means they got it right.
Bound some of them. Somebody did.
I'm going with B. I'm not sure, though. It's worded kind of weird.
They're all...
your station. They worded similarly, but controlled and uncontrolled.
Well, let's see if you got it right.
Oh, I did get there it right.
There you go.
I did. I wouldn't have...
The difference that I noticed... And I really didn't notice it. I had to read these a bunch of times. Some of them say controlled. Some of them say uncontrolled.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big difference between them right there. And some of them, MPE stands for maximum permitted exposure. And one of them, it stands for maximum permitted emission.
Emission, yeah, I saw that.
Or two of them, it stands, that's mm-hmm. it. And the correct answer is maximum permitted exposure. That's what MPE is.
Yeah, that's right.
But I got
so what's the difference between uncontrolled and controlled? Do you know?
As a matter of fact, let me reach back in my memory right here.
Oh, you got the same kind of memory I got.
Yeah, it's paper memory. RF exposure is averaged over a fixed time. Time averaging evaluates the total RF exposure over a specific time interval. There are two types of environments with different averaging periods. What do you think those might be? Uncontrolled environments, this is what you were asking about,
mm-hmm.
are areas where the general public has access. Public roadways, walkways, homes, schools, and unfenced personal property. All of those are uncontrolled environments.
Okay, that's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah. Your neighbor's homes are uncontrolled environments. People in uncontrolled environments are not aware of their exposure, but are less likely to receive continuous exposure. RF power density limits are higher for controlled environments. The averaging period for uncontrolled environments is longer. The averaging period is 6 minutes for controlled environments and 30 minutes for uncontrolled environments. So that means if I was measuring it right here in the shack or standing under my antenna, I've got to average it over 6 minutes. But if I'm calculating it out as to what I'm doing to the neighbors, I can average it over 30 minutes.
Always kind of, be honest with you, I kind of always kind of hated this part. Although it's a necessary thing to know, I just never didn't really enjoy the this part of it.
I remember when they first came out, the FCC first started requiring you to evaluate exposure on RF. I don't remember what year it was now, but I was working in radio already. And there were no limits. You just did whatever. I mean, and I've told you this before, I've actually climbed on an AM broadcast tower that was radiating 5,000 watts once. It was an uncomfortable experience, to say the least.
Yeah.
But there was an 80-year-old consulting engineer there telling me, just go on. Take this wood ladder, lean up against the tower because the tower's hot. Climb up the ladder, take this pair of uninsulated pliers.
Jump to the tower, don't touch anything.
No,
Well, climb up the wood ladder, take the uninsulated pliers, grab into the member of the tower there, twist around real good to break through the paint so that the pliers are making a good connection, and then reach your hand and climb on up. And so I climbed up the ladder. When I grabbed it with those pliers, man, it was sparking and carrying on. But it wasn't, holy moly, it wasn't burning me. It might be a little tingle.
That's like telling you just to like grab one hot leg of the
electric plug. Yeah. It was.
But be sure you have your tennis shoes on.
I wasn't really wanting to do it, but there's an 80-year-old man down there calling me a sissy, so.
Can't have that.
Yeah. Well, I figured, if he made it to 80 doing this, maybe it's okay. But no, it's not recommended or legal to do that anymore.
Yeah, don't do as he does.
Yeah, well, I only did it once. And I was up. I felt stuff tingling.
I bet you did. Down with a sunburn?
I would have got that anyway from being out in the sun. But
you don't know if there was RF burn or sunburn.
I'm not sure. That may have been why I had to have that hip replacement.
Could be. Good thing you didn't already have it, that metal up there.
Yeah. But anyway, then a few years after that, the FCC come through. Okay, you got to put up these RF warning signs everywhere. You've got to evaluate how long you can be, what distance from the tower or the tuning unit, and specify it in minutes and come up with all these plans. So I had to do all of that and rent gear to measure RF around transmitter sites and all of that. It was...
Wow.
Yeah. It was a big change in policy there.
Sounds like you needed one.
Yeah, I think we did.
Over what range of frequencies are the FCC human body RF exposure limits most restrictive? A, 300 kilohertz to 3 megahertz.
B, 3 to 30 megahertz.
C, 30 to 300 megahertz.
Or D, 300 to 3,000 megahertz. Over what range of frequencies are the human body RF exposure limits most restrictive? Mm-hmm. Well, let me say this. It's restrictive on all of those bands, on all those frequencies.
Some of them they're a little bit tighter on.
Some of them a little bit tighter. Like the first one, 300 kilohertz to 3 megahertz, that includes the AM broadcast band. And there are limits that you've got to observe and post all the signs. And 3,000 megahertz, we're talking about microwave there. Well, you wouldn't want to stick your head in one and turn it on.
No.
Or a hand or anything else. But the one that's affected the most, I'm going to say... Well, I'm pretty sure I know the answer. Do you want to answer it? You said you knew it.
I think it's C, 30 to 300 megahertz. I think I remember that from back when I took my test, actually.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Well, that is it. 30 to 300 megahertz. At least that's what I'm saying. The chat room mostly saying C, 30 to 300 megahertz. You can see the different wavelength of the bands there. You notice the red fingers pointing at 10 meters, which... around 28 megahertz.
Uh-huh.
And also all of the VHF bands. Those you have to evaluate if it exceeds 50 watts. UHF, you have to evaluate your power if it exceeds 70 watts. You can go up to 500 watts on 80 meters before the FCC says you really got to stop and think about this. What's safe and what's not. And same thing after you get above UHF. But the most restricted of those that you got evaluated if you exceed 50 watts. So that would be around 28 megahertz to all of VHF. And from our answer choices there, that includes 30 to 300 megahertz.
Huh.
When evaluating a site with multiple transmitters operating at the same time, the operators and licensees of which transmitters are responsible for mitigating overexposure situations? A, only the most powerful transmitter.
B, only commercial transmitters.
C, each transmitter that produces 5% of more of its MPE limit in areas where the total MPE limit is exceeded.
Or D, each transmitter operating with a duty cycle greater than 50%. When evaluating a site with multiple transmitters operating at the same time, operators and licensees, which transmitters are responsible for mitigating overexposure situations? Only the most powerful, only commercial. Each transmitter that produces 5% more or more of its MPE limit in areas where the total MPE is limit is exceeded. Each transmitter. It's got to be C.
I'm going to agree with you. It's C. C there?
C.
C.
I do see.
Yep. Yeah, only the most powerful transmitter. No, that's not correct. Everybody on that tower has got some responsibility. Only commercial transmitters. Now, that doesn't matter. What if the commercial transmitter's only running 5 watts and you're running 100?
Yep.
D, each transmitter operating with a duty cycle greater than 50%. You know, that's just, that couldn't be right. Each transmitter that produces 5% or more of the maximum permitted exposure limit.
That's only, that seems like the logical one.
You would think it'd be a little higher percentage than that, but 5 is it.
What is one of the potential hazards of operating in the amateur radio microwave bands? A, microwaves are ionizing radiation.
B, the high gain antennas commonly used can result in the high exposure levels.
C, microwaves often travel long distances by ionospheric reflection. That's a tongue twister.
D, the extremely high frequency energy can damage the joints of antenna structures. All right, what is one of the potential hazards of operating in the amateur radio microwave bands? It's not D, extremely high frequency energy can damage the joints of antenna structures. Never heard that, and it doesn't make sense. C, microwaves often travel long distances by ionospheric reflections. I don't think they do. But even if they did, that's not a hazard, you wouldn't think. B, the high gain antennas commonly used can result in high exposure levels. I think that's what everybody's going to say. Because you take a dish, you don't have to put in a lot of power to get a lot out in a focus beam. So, yeah, I'm going to say it's B. The chat room, oh, everybody's saying it's B in there. And it is. Yeah, and don't stand in front of the dish. That's very good.
Yeah, please don't.
Yep. We'll be back in just a moment.
Keep your contesting edge and be a Field Day leader with ICOM. Field Day is one of amateur radio's favorite events and is just around the corner. On June 22nd and 23rd, more than 40,000 North American hams will come together to operate remotely. ICOM's robust and high-quality transceivers easily cut through polyps so you can work the bands and make those contacts. ICOM is the clear choice for DXers and contesters around the globe. Upgrade your station with one of ICOM's fabulous HF radios. With the IC7610, faint signals are no longer challenging for DXers and contesters. The high-performance RMDR can pick out the faintest of signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. This is the SDR every ham wants. With ICOM's IC905, VHF contesting is a breeze. This all-mode rig covers 5 bands with 1 radio. 2 meters, 70 centimeters, 1.2 gigahertz, 2.4 gigahertz, 5.6 gigahertz bands, and with the optional CX10G transverter, 10 gigahertz. Large color touchscreen, easy D-Star settings, and a separate controller and RF module configuration to reduce signal loss. Explore the world of microwave with the IC905. The IC705 and IC7300 are the perfect go-to rigs for outdoor hams who love POTA and SOTA activations. Both radios feature a large touchscreen with real-time spectrum scope and waterfall for intuitive function and setting operations. The IC705 provides base station features and performance in the palm of your hand from HF to 50, 144, and 440 MHz. The IC7300 is an industry first, using RF direct sampling in an entry-level HF radio. For those of you with an IC7610 or IC7300, head on over to ICOMAmerica.com and download the latest firmware to get ICOM's new digital pre-distortion capabilities. This technology corrects nonlinear distortion at the final amplifier stage by applying inverse distortion at the pre-distortion section in the FPGA unit in advance. If you're getting a head start on hurricane season, ICOM's IC7100, ID5100, ID50, or ID52 are the perfect traveling companions and should be on your go-kit list. From high-powered base stations to compact and travel-friendly handhelds, ICOM radios offer in-demand features and functions to keep you active on all bands, inside your shack, or out in the field. For more information about ICOM's amateur radios, visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur today.
What do you say we give away something?
About the shirt off my back.
That's like it. That's exactly what I was thinking.
All right. Gonna get one of these. We're going to give away one of these Cool Ham Crew t-shirts. Compliments of, wrong side, ICOM. Look just as good when you leave in the Ham Fest as you do when you get there, as we usually say. Probably too many times.
Yeah. But it's working.
But, it's been working for a long time, so may as well stick with it.
So, what if somebody wanted to win your shirt? What would they do?
Well, first they would have to arm wrestle me. And then, of course, if you didn't want to do that, you can send an email to hamcollege@amateurlogic.tv to get in on the drawing. And, as a matter of fact, we just drew shortly, a little while ago, and the queue's all cleared up, so send your entries in for the next show.
So, do you have to be a ham?
You don't have to be a ham. You just need a name and an email address. Pretty much
it. That works.
About everybody on the planet's got one of those now.
Well, right before the show tonight, we drew that lucky winner.
Yeah, we did.
The random number drawing. And the most randomest number we got.
Who's the random winner?
It's Tim, KD0UUU.
Yeah, interesting call sign.
Please enter my email address to your t-shirt giveaway. 73.
Well, there you go. It was done, and you won. Congratulations.
You won, Tim. See, that's the kind of thing that makes winners out of
here, we
folks
get
right here.
Yeah. There you go. So if you want to be a winner next month or have a chance for it, send your entry in. The email address is on the screen. Somewhere right there.
Yep.
And get your entry in.
Cool.
Operators are standing by. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Well, we got some more questions here, so let's get on into them and see what we got. This is the last, how many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 questions. In the amateur extra exam pool.
Gonna hate to see it go.
Well, kind of do, but let's see what the questions are before we go too far on that.
Okay.
We might be glad to see some of these.
Very well could.
Why are there separate electric E and magnetic H field MPE limits? MPE is maximum permitted exposure. A, the body reacts to electromagnetic radiation from both the E and H fields.
B, ground reflections and scattering make the field strength vary with location.
C, E field and H field radiation intensity peaks can occur at different locations.
Or D, all these choices are correct. Body reacts to electromagnetic radiation from both E and H. So I would say yeah for that. Ground reflections and scattering make the field strength vary with location. E and H field radiation intensity peaks can occur at different locations. I'm not 100% sure. I know A is right. I think B and C are true also. So I'm going to go with D. All these choices are correct.
Okay. And it is. All these choices are correct.
How may dangerous levels of carbon monoxide from an emergency generator be detected? A, by the odor.
B, only with a carbon monoxide detector.
C, any ordinary smoke detector can be used.
Or D, by the yellowish appearance of the gas. How may dangerous levels of carbon monoxide from an emergency generator be detected? A, by the odor. You know, that would be my first thought, but that's because we use gasoline generators, and if you're smelling a generator,
you're just smelling the burnt gas. You're not really smelling the carbon monoxide.
Well, I guess that's true, but you really wouldn't want that in your tent
either.
Oh, it
comes hand in hand.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think the only bona fide answer, and yellowish appearance of the gas, well, what if it's knocked you out? You're not going to be seeing the gas. And I guess if it's knocked you out, you're not going to be smelling the odor either. C, any ordinary smoke detector can be used. Well, we know that's not right.
No, it's not right.
And we know they sell carbon monoxide detectors, and that's going to be the safest answer there. It's got to be B. Chat room's all saying B. Yeah, it was a good question before field day. Carbon monoxide is colorless and odorless, Tom says.
Exactly.
And that's right.
If you don't have a carbon monoxide detector in your house and you have gas, anything, get one.
Yes. What does SAR measure? A, synthetic aperture ratio of the human body.
Ooh. B, signal amplification rating.
C, the rate at which RF energy is absorbed by the body.
Or D, the rate of RF energy reflected from stationary terrain. I don't know what SAR stands for.
Well, that's an important thing to know.
Well, but I think the end result is what does it measure? And not, in light of tonight's topic, I'm thinking it's going to be C, the rate at which RF energy is absorbed by the body.
You mean tell you what SAR means?
Yeah.
Specific absorption rate.
Oh, I knew that. I just forgot it.
Yep.
Yep.
So now they'll start answering. Yep. Everybody's saying C. Well, everybody who's answering, I'll put it that way.
Had to be. Which insulated material commonly used as a thermal conductor for some type of electronic devices is extremely toxic if broken or crushed and the particles are accidentally inhaled? A, mica.
B, zinc oxide.
C, beryllium oxide.
Or D, uranium hexafluoride. Which insulating material commonly used as a thermal conductor for some type of electronic device is extremely toxic if broken and crushed and the particles are accidentally inhaled? Well, I think everybody's going to get this one. Mica, I think that's relatively safe. Zinc oxide, probably. I mean, they got like zinc tablets that you take.
Mm-hmm.
D, uranium hexafluoride.
I don't think we've been using any uranium for...
No, I don't brush my teeth for that.
Nope.
So
gonna keep them nice and white.
Till they fell out. But we've heard this one before. See, beryllium oxide.
Yeah.
That's something you don't want to mess with. It's okay as long as it's not broken or crushed.
And what contains that? It's
an insulating material, so yeah.
I mean, is there anything in particular you know of that has it?
Well, actually, I do have something to say about that.
It's almost like I knew, but I didn't.
Let's see if that's the right answer there. Chat room is... They are thinking, yeah. So it is beryllium oxide. Francis Wynn is saying, I ran into that With Ampex digital video recorders, the slip rings contain this. I did not realize that.
Interesting.
Some high-power RF transistors, the insulating material on it is made of that. Different things where the temperature is going to be kind of high, we'll use that as an insulator. Beryllium oxide is an inorganic compound with the formula BeO. This colorless solid is a notable electrical insulator with a higher thermal conductivity than any other non-metallic except diamond, and exceeds that of most metals. So there you go. That's why, because it can take the heat. So beryllium oxide is carcinogen if it's in a powdered form and may cause chronic allergic type lung disease, borreliosis. Once fired in solid form, it's safe to handle if not subjected to machining that generates dust. Clean breakage releases little dust, but crushing or grinding actions can pose a risk. So don't be grinding your beryllium. What toxic material may be present in some electronic components, such as high-voltage capacitors and transformers? A. Polychlorinated biphenyls.
B. Polyethylene.
C. Poly...
Tetra.
Polytetrafluorethane. Don't know.
Close enough.
C. Polytetrathorylene. No.
Polytetrafluorethylene.
Yeah, what he said.
Or D. Polymorphic silicon. I am completely lost on this one. What toxic material may be present in some electronic components, such as high voltage capacitors and transformers? I'm going, because I've never heard of it, and it's a really ugly word, I'm going with C. Polytetrafluorethylene. If I'm probably not saying that right. Oh, everybody else is saying A.
You've already said it.
Yeah, I said it. Biphenyls doesn't sound too good.
Well, this was basically your last opportunity for a buzzer in the whole example.
And I'm coming through, aren't I?
You stepped up to the challenge.
Hey, somebody's got to do it. I'm the only one that don't know what that is.
Polychlorinated biphenyls. PCBs. You ever heard that term?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's actually a chemical that was used as an insulator or dielectric in capacitors and some electronic components. It was used a lot because it's non-flammable. And where they're making big oil-filled capacitors, these are real common in a lot of old tube-type transmitters. They have big oil-filled capacitors in there, and they would use that because it was a good insulating material, could take a lot of heat, and it wouldn't burst into flames. So it was great for what they're using it for. Unfortunately, apparently it causes cancer. You can't build anything new with that. And all the old capacitors and transformers and items you have that, yeah, pole pig transformers have them too, the older ones. If it was over a certain size, you had to stick one of these labels on it. And you had to log it ever so often as to whether it was leaking or not. And that could only be used in that transmitter that it came in. If you had to replace it, you'd need to find something else. There again, that's one of those things when I was working at a radio station and that law came out. And then all of a sudden, I've got these old transmitters that all these capacitors and one big modulation transformer had this stuff in it. Had to stick those labels on it and create logs for it. So it was another government regulation that we had to observe. But you will see those stickers around a lot if you're looking at older electronic stuff.
Uh-huh.
And if you're unsure if a device had that in it, you had to stick a sticker on it.
There is a place close by here. I don't know all the details, I know the name of it, but I'm not going to say the name of the place. I'll tell you off after the show. But they made transformers, and I think they had some kind of a environmental
problem.
Probably
did.
They had to
dig
up a lot of ground around here and haul it off and stuff. Yeah. Well, but I don't want to say because I don't know all the details, but I do know it happened.
What I did was remove those capacitors in the transmitters that I had that had them in it and replaced them with newer capacitors that didn't contain that type of oil. And the old ones, I got a 55-gallon drum, filled it about that deep in cat litter, put all the old capacitors in it, and then called an environmental company to come pick it up, transport it to a place over in Alabama, an incinerator where they burn that stuff.
Well, bring them to Alabama. We don't want them over there either.
Well, we don't, but that was the only place close that would burn it. So I've forgotten what it cost to have that done. It was several thousand dollars.
Yeah. You know, I learned that from my job, that if you have something like that, you're responsible for it. Basically, from the cradle to the grave, like for the end of time.
Yep.
Like, if you make that stuff and haul it off, it's not disposed of properly, it'll come back and bite you.
Yep.
It can. It should.
Sure can.
Marty, in the chat room, Marty says there's a town in eastern Missouri that's been abandoned due to a company that used PCBs to oil the streets there.
Wow.
Times Beach, Missouri.
That's bad.
Wow. The whole town. I'm going to look that up, Marty. Yeah. That's interesting.
Some of the old-time hams used to fill their RF dummy loads with PCB oil. Yeah, that's true, too. Some of those old 1-gallon cantinas could have PCB oils.
In them. Oh, that's one. Yeah.
Now
they use mineral oil.
They use mineral oil. Yeah, they've been doing that.
I know the MFJ ones all have mineral oil in them.
Yeah.
Or did.
Yeah.
And they're still doing them.
One final question.
Matter of fact, I think when you ordered those, you had to put your own oil in it, didn't you?
Yeah, it doesn't come with the oil.
One last question. That's your chance to totally redeem yourself and get a buzzer.
Okay.
One for the road. Which of the following injuries can result from using high-power UHF or microwave transmitters? A, hearing loss caused by high-voltage corona discharge.
B, blood clotting from the intense magnetic field.
It's not really a laughing matter.
No.
C, localized heating of the body from RF exposure in excess of the MPE limits.
Or D, ingestion of ozone gas from the cooling system. Which of the following injuries can result from using high-power UHF or microwave transmitters? A, hearing loss caused by high-voltage corona discharge. I would say if it was generating enough high-voltage corona discharge to cause hearing losses, the thing would probably have burned down before, you know. You got that for B, blood clotting from the intense magnetic field. I've never known that to be a problem. I guess maybe if you had too much iron in your blood. I don't know.
You were in about as intense of a magnetic field as you can come up with.
But it wasn't UHF or microwave.
No, that's true. That is true.
Yeah. So I don't think it's blood clotting. D, ingestion of ozone gas from the cooling system. Usually the cooling system would be like a water-cooled, which it might have some antifreeze in it. But, and you wouldn't be smelling any ozone gas coming out of it, for sure. C, localized heating of the body from RF exposure in excess of the MPE limits. That's it. C.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. You think about it. You got a microwave oven. You put a piece of chicken in there. You put it on for 30 seconds. and then you try to eat it. Parts of it's going to be hot, parts of it's going to be cold. Localized heating. See.
Plus, ingestion of ozone gas isn't necessarily cause an injury. I guess if you had enough of it, maybe.
Yeah.
But my CPAP machine generates ozone gas to disinfect the hoses and stuff.
Does it?
Well, the CPAP machine doesn't. I have a cleaning thing that it hooks up to.
There's you an RF exposure warning sign there. That's not the only one. Radio frequency radiation present. We've got similar signs at all the transmitter sites. Because it's another one of the things that the government says you have to have there. And plus, you know, it's good for, sometimes good for keeping people away from your transmitter sites.
You can hang one on your front door, too, if you don't want visitors.
You could. But
you're kind of antisocial.
If it's like the ones at the transmitter site, people shoot at those, so you may not want to hang it on your front door.
Yeah. Don't do that, then.
And that's the final question from the amateur extra exam pool.
Seems like it was just yesterday when we started.
Yeah.
Actually, it don't. It seemed like it's been pretty good while.
Seemed like it, because these were some tough questions, man.
And there's the pool is actually really large.
Yeah.
I don't remember the total number of questions right now, but there's well over 300.
What is that, 29? We had 29 episodes of the technician pool, and number 30 through number 60. So we had 30 that were the general question pool, and then 61 through 113. That's almost twice as many. Close to twice as many. So there were a lot of questions in that extra pool. So you have to do some real studying. Anyway, now that we're at the end of the extra exam pool, it's time for you to go take your test, as we said earlier, before June the 30th, or else you're going to have to study the new exam material coming out, which is probably going to be a lot like the old, but there'll be some new questions, and there'll be some that got dropped.
Yeah. You could probably just get the differences. Somewhere they'll publish the changes, just the changes.
They will. It'll take a little while before that's out there, but it's coming. So, Dean, now that we're at the end of the extra pool, that means we've been through all three amateur radio exams, the technician, the general, and the extra. What do we want to do next?
Start over again?
Sounds like a good idea. Why don't we take it easy on ourselves for a while?
Yeah.
Maybe for like 29 or so episodes.
Okay. Start back over with the technician pool?
I think that'd be a good place to start. That pool has changed since the last time we went over it.
Definitely.
And it'd be a good opportunity to maybe make some new hams, because that's the entry level.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I had someone today thinking about getting into ham radio.
Yeah. I got a coworker that just took his technician test, passed it, but would have been helpful for him to have his study.
Yeah. Maybe some of you got friends or relatives you'd like to twist their arm a little bit, get them into ham radio. So that's what we're going to do next. We're going to cover the technician exams again, and it'll be a little different than what we've just been through. Since the questions will be somewhat easier, we'll probably throw in a little extra stuff in there, too.
Maybe we need to bust out the spark gap transmitter again, see if it's still cooking.
It's still right up there.
All right. Oh, it sure is.
I've been thinking about a mod for it, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Spark arrester?
No, that wouldn't really work, would it?
No.
I do have an idea for a mod, though, that might make it more efficient.
Built-in fire extinguisher?
No, we had to use the old manual one over there. But anyhow.
Okay. Next month, we'll be starting over on Ham College with the technician question pool. So we'll be starting over with that.
Yep.
If you know anybody that's interested or think you may be interested, turn them on to the show.
Yep. We're going to have to buy a new book, too.
Yep.
Because we don't have a current technician
that's true.
Book. But Anyway.
It's okay. We can find one. I know a guy that makes some great books.
Yep. So we'll hopefully make a few new hams out of that.
Yep. I've been ham long enough, too, but and those questions are not nearly as... There's some tough ones in there, but they're not nearly as tough as
not like
some of these.
Through.
So
yeah,
looking forward to that.
Yeah, you don't come out with bruises and scratches, you know.
Not too often.
We hope you join us next month for that. And by the way, we haven't run this by Mike or Emil yet. We are thinking about changing next month's schedule a little bit, just for next month, because of field day. Field day is coming up, and of course, everyone here is going to want to participate in that if at all possible. Tommy and I plan to do it. I know Emil, and I'm pretty sure Mike will as well. Always a great fun event. We've got a few new things to try, but that's going to be Saturday, June the 22nd, and Sunday the 23rd.
And I'll be here before you know it.
Yeah, less than a month. We won't be going back to the woods, I don't think, this year. We're going back to where we were last year. We'll have to set up all our antennas, though. There's not a ham station there.
Back to the brick-and-mortar tent?
Back to brick-and-mortar tent. Yeah, exactly. So we'll be doing some roughing it, but we won't be pitching a tent and trying to put an air conditioner on it. I'll put it that way. Although that was fun now.
It is fun. But really, almost need some more hands, too, to do that, because that's a pretty massive undertaking to
it
set
is.
All that up.
And so I don't even know if Wayne will be in town. I hadn't talked to him. He last couple of years, he's been out hiking somewhere.
Yeah, I hadn't talked to Wayne in forever.
Yeah. So we're thinking, since we're going to be shooting video for field day, Amateur Logic would normally be the weekend before, and that means that we wouldn't see the field day footage until July, the middle of July. So rather than hold that footage for a whole month, I think what we want to do is swap Ham College and Amateur Logic positions next month, just so that right after field day, the weekend after field day, we can have Amateur Logic and have our field day coverage. That means that Ham College will be on June the 15th, June the 14th. Amateur Logic will be on June the 28th for 1 month only.
Yeah, that'd be good. So that way the field day cover, video will be fresh, not almost a month old.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so with that... before we get out of here, any final thoughts tonight, Dean?
No, it's been fun. Be sure, if you've been going along with us and you're waiting to take your test, be sure and set that up and go take care of it before the 30th of June,
yeah,
before the question pool changes.
So you got about a month to get it done.
Yeah.
And really, if you've been studying it at all, well, I guess the main thing is, can you find somewhere that's going to be giving it within a month? Most places you probably can. There are online exam options as well now.
Yeah.
Those are still going. That got started during COVID, so that's another option you got.
Yeah, that's just a good option.
Yep.
Other than that, that's, we'll find some supper.
That sounds like a good idea. So join us back here on Ham College on June the 14th. And Amateur Logic, June the 28th.
Yep.
7-3, everyone. And we will see you in the technician exam.
Yep, 7-3, everybody. See you in a couple of weeks.